everyone out there in podcast land, and welcome to another episode for the Front Row Network. No, you are shouldn't be in disbelief. This is an episode of Flashback. We are coming back. I don't know if that works, but we're coming back with a fury. We did one in October. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do one in November. I had some things come up, and I know Scott's got things come up, but we are back. We're actually going to have two this month. But Flashbacks is here to honor the movies of the past that still resonate now as we are in this new millennium. We are honoring a movie today that turned 30 years old in November. That movie, without this movie, we would not have the romantic comedy structure that we have in today's cinema. And that movie we are talking about today is When Harry Met Sally. I am Ryan Lutens, and today we have a first-timer with us. And she is a regular on Beyond the Mouse, Miss Vanessa Ferguson. How you doing?
I'm good. And we should tell everyone that we're recording this in Katz's Deli, New York.
Woohoo! I'll have what he's having. Oh, wait. All right. I mean, we are going to get to that infamous scene here. That scene is, beyond a doubt, one of the most infamous scenes. You don't even have to see this movie, and you know exactly what we're talking about with the I'll have what she's having. But before we get into that, we're just going to kind of introduce the movie a little bit. This movie is a movie about friendship. It is about love. It is about sex. It is about what it means to be together with the person you're meant to be with. This movie really paved the way for romantic comedies. But it also paved the way for what an actual drama about relationships should be. I mean, this movie broke a lot of barriers because of what it actually talked about in and of itself. It's not a movie that where a whole lot happens, but a whole lot happens with our characters as they grow. You have our lead actor, Harry, played by Billy Crystal, who meets by chance a woman by the name of Sally, played by Meg Ryan. And just by this off chance, they start a friendship, and that friendship takes a very complete 180 turn. And then they meet 10 years later on a plane ride. And on that plane ride, they discover that they shouldn't be friends. And then another 2 years later, they meet, and all of a sudden, best friends, and that friendship blossoms into something else, which we will get to as we continue on. But as we always talk about here on Flashbacks, we always want to flashback and talk about the first time that we saw this movie. So, Vanessa, kind of give us some insight when you your first experience with When Harry Met Sally.
Well, I don't remember specifically the first time watching this. I grew up in a household, so I was probably, I think, 2 when this movie came out. And I definitely remember watching it at a young age. This is an insight into my mom's parenting. She let me watch things that were beyond the years of for me to watch them. So a lot of the stuff that's in this movie went right over my head. The infamous scene at Katz's Deli, that went over my head. I really thought she was eating something delicious, and I wanted to know what it was. But my main takeaway from it was actually that this is a beautiful portrait of New York, and the movie really shows, like, New York, if you're falling in love in New York, romance in New York. And the funny thing about this was, I really didn't remember all the cursing in the movie, which isn't a lot, but I think they say the F word like 4 times. And I went on a high school band trip to New York, and they said we could bring movies that take place in New York. And so I was like, oh, I'll bring When Harry Met Sally. And they asked me, they're like, is this appropriate? And I was like, oh, yeah. Well, I think they might say a bad word like 1 time. Oh, my teachers were so furious with me. Not only do they say it more than once, but there's a lot of adult situations and material in there that's not appropriate necessarily for, you know, a bunch of 16, 17-year-olds. But what are you going to do?
I mean, I can only imagine how that deli scene went when you're on a bus full of kids.
I just told everybody you should have tried the sandwich. If you'd had that sandwich, you would know why she's doing that.
You know, for me, my first experience with When Harry Met Sally is I remember seeing it on TV, but not really being interested because, you know, as a young male, you're like, this is just another love story thing. But as I grew older and I actually caught it for the first time, maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, right when I turned like 21, maybe 12 years ago. But actually it reminded me a movie that I actually am really infatuated with. I mean, I just love these movies, but it's the Before trilogy with Ethan Hawke and Julie Deeply. It's the story of two people that take a chance on each other and kind of walk around. In this case, it was Venice in the very first one. And they just talk. And you get that feeling with When Harry Met Sally. And like you said, the landscape in New York. And I'm going to talk about that when I talk about my likes. But you really watch it. And the themes in this movie, I mean, yes, it is a hilarious movie. It is very, very funny. Most of the script, I shouldn't say most, a majority of the script was ad-libbed. Nora Ephron, the writer, basically gave them the structure. And she went, said, go for it. I mean, she was on set. She said, you know, okay, this is what should be happening. This should be what should be happening. But it's very beautiful to see how the story evolves. And when you find out that a lot of it is just off the cuff, it really makes for a great story. But, you know, behind the humor is a very good character story between these two characters of Harry and Sally. And the friendships that they have, not only with each other, but their other friends. I forget the friend's name. Carrie Fisher played her.
Marie.
And then Billy Crystal had his friend played by Bruno Kirby. Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
We'll get there.
I wrote down was Bruno Kirby.
Bruno Kirby, right? But no, I mean, it's great because you see Harry and Sally interact, and then you see these, they go out and they talk to their counterparts, and it's awesome to just watch that on screen. So I guess we'll dive into likes and dislikes, because obviously that's what we're talking about right now, are things that we like. For me, one of the things that I absolutely cannot get over when it comes to this movie is the acting by the two leads, Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. These two, their chemistry is unmatched, until you get to, Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks for two films. But it's easy to believe them, in a short span of time when they first meet, you know, hey, they're getting along, they're talking. And then, they're sitting in a diner when they first meet, they're right out of college and they're traveling to New York. They're set up. They're not set up in the sense that traditionally we think of. They're like, hey, my friend's going, or Billy Crystal's girlfriend is Meg Ryan's best friend at the time. So
Amanda Reese.
That's right. She sets him up to travel to New York together. And on this trip, they're just making casual conversation and they get to a deli, and Billy Crystal brings up being attracted to Meg Ryan Sally. And that's when the whole thing falls apart. And in that moment, you believe it. I mean, these two people sell these characters. When you have a movie that's really just about two people, I can't think of two other people that would have sold this movie better than these two. Vanessa, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Like, this is, well, first of all, my parents had a kind of tumultuous relationship themselves. So this seemed very normal to me. This kind of always edgy conversation. I mean, it just made sense to me. I totally agree. You know, we kind of look through, as we're researching this, we see who else could have played these parts. And Tom Hanks was one of them. Michael Keaton was thrown out. I just don't think it would have worked as well with Billy. I mean, Billy Crystal, he's got that comic thing where he can be slightly negative. I actually don't even really love him in the beginning of this film, but as his character progresses and grows, I really like him. I really like his kind of cynical take on things, because it's also somewhat realistic, his kind of negative outlook. You know, as I've gotten older, I feel that in my soul, that I'm way grumpier than I used to be. I totally get reading the last page of a book, In Case You Die. That makes total sense to me. Meg Ryan as well. She plays this kind of difficult person, which is really, and in reality, these characters are Nora Ephron and Rob Reiner.
Yep.
Like, this is, if you watch the interviews, you're like, oh yeah, Sally is Nora Ephron. Like, she is, she's a woman who knows what she wants. She speaks her mind. She does take a really long time to order food, ridiculously order food. Rob Reiner too, I didn't realize that how much of this character was really him. He had just gotten out of a divorce, and he's kind of, as when he came up with this idea, he had gotten out of divorce. It took a few years for this movie to get made. But, you know, as he's going through this time of his life, he has a bit of a cynical viewpoint. And it's not until he falls in love himself, actually, on the set of When Harry Met Sally with his now wife, Michelle, that he finally gets the ending of this movie where Harry and Sally actually can fall in love despite, you know, Sally being difficult, despite Harry being a kind of a cynical person.
Yeah. You know, and I'm really glad they brought up Rob Reiner because, I mean, he has gone on record and said that he was the most depressed while filmmaking, while doing this filmmaking process for Harry and Sally. And him and Billy Crystal would get together and they would just be like, okay, let's just do this. And some of these things that we see just come through in the movie brilliantly. Billy Crystal just takes it and runs with it. The structure, you know, Nora Ephron gave them a skeletal work. They meet, they hate each other. They meet again, still decide they can't be friends, because the whole premise of the movie is friends can't be friends without a sexual attraction. That's what prevents Harry and Sally from being together from the onset. Right. So you have meeting, doesn't work out. Meet again, still doesn't work out. Meeting when they're together, they both have significant others, they become friends. And so that whole stereotype is gone. So it really kind of paints a picture of modern dating. So this screenplay is really, really well done in the fact that, they were just given a structure and they kind of met with the actors and let the actors kind of take their own spin on it. Because Billy Crystal, a lot of his things were ad-libbed, and that was ad-lib came from working with Rob Reiner. Nora Ephron kind of worked with Meg Ryan because Nora Ephron has said that she has written it as herself. And Rob Reiner in an interview said that he remembers Nora Ephron going to order, like you had brought up, and he goes, "I'm putting that in the movie." And she goes, "Okay." So it really is art breathing life into this movie. But I mean, the characters of Harry and Sally, their evolution to the very end of the movie when they're talking about Auld Lang Syne. I mean, his speech at the end, I mean, I was in love with it. I mean, you know, I love that you get cold at 71 degrees, specifically 71 degrees. I mean, everything right. That he's just pouring his heart out. Like, I believed him. Like, I wasn't watching Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. I was watching Harry and Sally. And I don't know. I just made the movie work all around. Any more thoughts on that?
Well, just in that last scene, I remember watching it and being like, wait, do they like each other? Because he just listed all these things that are annoying. And she just said, "I hate you. I really hate you." But then they start kissing. Are they going to end up together? And then thank goodness for these little short scenes throughout the movie to tie it all in. Because yeah. In that last scene, when we see, you know, that they have gotten married, it's like, oh, good. They made it work, despite telling those awful things they just said to each other. I'm glad for them.
You know, and it's interesting because I love that they showed like the last 2 years pretty close together, because it showed their friendship. I mean, you could honor or argue that this is a Christmas movie because they show Sally getting a Christmas tree. And then when they're not together as friends, she's carrying it and dragging it down the street. It's a very funny scene, but she's dragging a Christmas tree down the street. Yeah. You know,
but also because it is set, I think, and this was intentional, that because it is set at those times of year with Christmas and New Year's, I mean, those are romantic times of years. And if you're alone,
yeah.
It can be depressing. If you have someone, it can be a relief. I love that. That's, to me, it's a more of a New Year movie because that's how it ends. But, you know, I really like their intentional use of the holidays. Because who hasn't been there? Who hasn't been from New Year's? Like, well, I got no one to kiss this year, going on 30 years, but whatever. You know, we've all been there, and so I love that they used that as a means of showing how they connect through that kind of sadness.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Another thing that I liked, and you had already brought it up, is the backdrop of New York City. Yes. What a beautiful location. Some of these shots were excellent. But what I really loved is how they used New York in essence to the story that's going on, because Rob Reiner, who directed the film, got some beautiful shots of the landscape of New York. There's that scene where they're walking through Central Park and they're talking. But the thing is these characters are so wrapped up in themselves. Like, the beauty of the area around them is really transfixing them, because it's you see what's going on around them, but they don't see it. And it's in that moment, that beauty, that they don't see it, but they're just so transfixed on each other and just talking that they don't really catch what's going on, the beauty surrounding them. So thoughts on that, if you haven't thought about that?
I hadn't noticed that. I always think, oh, it's so beautiful. New York is so safe, when that's probably not the case.
No, but I mean, it's just that walk in the park. I mean, they're just walking and they're not really taking in the beauty, because they're so transfixed on each other, but that beauty around them is kind of transposing on them and what's happening between them. So I thought that was a beautiful kind of unspoken thing that Rob Reiner did. Do you have anything else that you would like to talk about in the likes or dislikes, or likes before we get to dislikes?
Oh gosh. I mean, there's just so much. There's a really clever way that Rob has shot some of these scenes. When they're at the airport and they're on like the moving conveyor belt, that's a one shot scene. Yeah. I mean, there's no cutaways on that. That has to be perfect. They're going weaving through people, and Billy Crystal's just seamlessly delivering this dialogue as only he can, as he's got that great comedic timing. They kind of do the same thing with the phone sing scene, where they have Carrie Fisher has a phone line and Bruno Kirby has a phone line, which was very cool, by the way. That did not go unnoticed, that they had two landlines in their house. Yep.
Marie and Jesse, that was his name, Jesse or Jess. Yeah.
They have this fancy apartment where they can have two landlines. That's amazing. And then you have Sally on her line, and Billy's at some, or Harry's at some, I guess, payphone. And apparently that scene was three different sets. And I mean, the timing had to be so perfect. I guess they actually had to shoot it like 60 times to just get it right.
Yeah.
Because it is, it's like, you say a line, you say a line, you say a line. I mean, that's kind of like throughout the whole film, that there's a rhythm to this dialogue, and it's very comedic, and it's delivered so perfectly. And then I know we're getting there, but when we do talk about that deli scene, if you notice right after it goes into Ray Charles, Christmas music, and showing scenes of the city, that is so necessary for the laugh. You have to have a pause. You have to have a break in the action to allow the laughter to come in. So not only was this written well, you have the input of Billy Crystal, who's a comedian. Rob Reiner obviously worked in comedy for years. Nora Ephron is very witty and smart. But then you have timing, like even the way it's laid out, these scenes are laid out, is laid out like you would a stand-up, you know, as a stand-up show. Yep. You have to give it space. So I just thought that was so brilliant, because I realized I was laughing so long into this like Christmas music that I'm like, oh wow, like I haven't missed anything, because they gave me that time to laugh. So that, I mean, they just did so much that was so clever and smart.
Yeah,
in this
absolutely
film.
You brought up the phone scene. So pivotal moment of the movie, in a moment of weakness, I shouldn't say weakness for our characters, but both of these characters finds out that they're significant others. So when they were friends, they had significant others. They broke up, but then both Harry and Sally find out that their significant others are getting married. And in that moment of weakness, or moment of, hey, I need you, I shouldn't say. It was a moment of weakness for Harry. Hey, Harry, I need you. He comes over and they sleep together. And that when they wake up, that scene where, you know, she's like, oh, she's all nice and cozy, and Billy Crystal is just wide eyed, like, oh crap, is this going to ruin it? Like,
terrifying.
You could just read it on his face. And so, you know, he has no idea what to do. So what does he do? He gets out and runs. And then that's where this four-way call comes in. And it is beautifully shot by Rob. And like you said, it took 65 takes, almost somewhere in there. But to have that, you know, timing down in the comedy, it's just crazy because Sally's on the phone with Marie saying that, you know, it happened. She's so happy. And then you've got Jess on the phone with Harry. He's like, oh, God, what do I do? It's just, like you said, this comedic timing of it was just spectacular. I know one thing that I want to talk about is the music of this movie. A lot of this music that I thought did really, really well, a lot of this music was actually sung by Harry Connick Jr. So, you know, it really just makes me, I mean, it's all songs that we know, but he uses his slow, you know, almost jazzy type voice. And it just really brings an additional level to this movie. You know, and yeah, that's all I really got to say about that. Any thoughts?
Well, he went on to get his first Grammy from the work he did on this film. So yeah, those are some of my favorite renditions of those pieces. Don't Get Around Much Anymore. I think that's the name of the song. That is so good. And Harry Connick Jr. is singing it. And yeah, I love it. I guess, and then also, I mean, he didn't do all the music in the movie. There were other really well-selected pieces. I believe Mark Shaman was the one who actually picked these, and he's worked with Rob Reiner since this film was made.
Yes, he was the music supervisor.
Yeah. So, but he, I mean, I love that they chose kind of a jazzier feel. It keeps the movie light. You understand that it's complicated because jazz is complicated. But it's fun. Yes. I just really love the selections of music, and I still listen to that album actually.
It's a good one. It's a good one. You know, with this movie, we can talk about, you know, the likes for probably a while, because I mean, you have Carrie Fisher and then you've got Bruno Kirby as the best friends, and they were very selective. There's even a scene where Sally tries to set up Harry with Marie, and then you have Harry trying to set up Jess with Sally, and just that whole dinner scene was great. Sally talking to Jess and just like, not really getting into it. And then when you go to Carrie Fisher and Billy Crystal, their interactions were great. Like, it's just one word answers, and it's so funny. I mean, that scene was just, it was awesome. Acting talent in just that one double date scene was great.
I know there are some iconic lines in this movie we'll talk about, but my personal favorite is, well, there's two, and they're both from Carrie Fisher. First of all, the classic, "You're right, you're right. I know you're right." So good. I still use that. And then my absolute favorite line in this movie is, "I want you to know I will never want that wagon wheel coffee table." That's so oh, I love Carrie Fisher so much. She's just a genius.
My favorite line is not the line that we're going to talk in one of the most iconic scenes. My line comes from the wagon wheel scene. Billy Crystal's Harry just found out that his ex-wife was getting remarried. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about the wagon wheel coffee table. He says he doesn't like it. And Bruno Kirby's Jesse goes, "Well, I thought you did say you liked it." And he looks at him just straight face, but really angry. He goes, "I was being nice." And he just walks off. Yeah. I mean, just the comedic timing. I mean, it just made the scene like you could feel his grief and his anger all in one.
Right. And it's so hilarious. It's the perfect way of showing how frustrated he is, but in a hilarious way. And the Surrey with the fringe on top scene.
Yes.
Oh my God. How terrible is that to be singing that song in front of your ex, and then her new man comes up, and then I love it when Sally says Helen in the microphone. You just feel it. Like, you're just, your soul aches. Oh, this is so awkward. But oh, now every time Oklahoma, Whenever I see Oklahoma and they sing that song, I always say, "Now you" in the lyrics. So, every time.
Oh man, this movie is great. I mean, we could go on and on about what we like, but I think everyone gets the gist that this is a really good movie, but let's take a look and see, you know, if there's anything that you don't like. I mean, I know there's something that I don't like. Vanessa, is there anything that you can think of that maybe this movie you're like, eh?
Yeah, there were two things that really stuck out to me. The first one, when Sally is seeing Harry in the bookstore after all these years, and she's with Marie, and Marie says, "Hey, someone is staring at you in personal growth." And then Sally says something that is such a jerk move to say. She says, "You would like him, he's married." I was like, "Oh, that is so mean," because as we know, Marie is like hung up on this married man. But that is such a nasty thing to say to your girlfriend. That rubs me the wrong way. That's not being a good friend to your gal pal.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that I really don't care for Harry much in the beginning of the film.
He's a douchebag.
Yeah, he's a real jerk. And, you know, I like him when he's coming out of divorce. I empathize with him a lot more. I understand that, especially getting older in my life and understanding that things are complicated, things don't always work out. You know, I really enjoy his curmudgeon kind of demeanor when he's divorced, because it makes sense to me. He's divorced and now he's grumpy. But in the beginning of the movie, he just comes off as a total ass.
Yeah.
And it's hard to like him in the beginning of the film.
I agree with you. But I think that's, you know, kind of what they're trying to do is show you, like, this guy is just completely set in his ways. When he meets Sally, it's kind of like the yin to his yang.
Sure. I mean, it makes sense in that they cannot get together in the beginning of the film. So there has to be something that turns her off. But when I hear that Rob Reiner, you know, kind of based this movie off of hit after he felt after his divorce, I still like Rob Reiner. I can't imagine him being a jerk before he got divorced. So that's, I mean, I understand why it was used in the movie, but it still didn't make me love the character right off the bat.
Right, right. And, you know, I agree with you 100% because it's, he was a jerk. He just oozed.
He hit off her window.
He oozed senility. Yeah.
There are bright seats on her window.
He oozes like toxic male masculinity almost, you know. Oh, man.
what did you not like in the film?
For me, it was two things. It was too short. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but when you have something good going, do you just let it go or can you maybe squeeze a little bit more out of it? Because to me, there was never a dull moment. I mean, this perfectly illustrated a relationship, one that wasn't there, one that became a friendship, one that became something sexual, and then one that became true love and how they ended together. And it's like, you know what? I want more. Or is the time enough? Like, did we get what we were supposed to see? You know, I wrestle with that because, you know, I wish that there's things that we could have seen, but, you know, it works and it's still a good movie. You know, could more movie have killed it? Probably. I don't know. It's something that has always left me wondering. And another thing to me is that I really don't like about the movie, and I've actually read elsewhere that a lot of people are like, well, this doesn't really work for the movie. Just the title. The title is really, really flat. When Harry Met Sally, I mean, okay, did they, you know, I get it. They meet, you know,
and I get
that there's like dot, dot, dot to show that there's more to the story, but, you know, be creative, you know, I read somewhere that Rob Reiner even shopped Castle Rock Entertainment. He went to intern, like, what should we call this movie? Because, I mean, even they didn't know. And it's almost like, we have to wrap this up. We have to name it. So let's just name it.
Yeah, Nora Ephron too said if she could change one thing about this film, it would be the title.
Yeah,
and I get that.
You know, it's
what would you rename it as? Do you have any ideas?
Love in New York.
Oh,
or budding romance in New York, or love and friendship. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a screenwriter. What would you name it?
Well, I was thinking based off this song, I'm very specific though, so punctuation is important. it had to be you, but with the had italicized.
Yeah, okay, I see, and I like that because it had, because these two guys have, they've known each other for 12 years. And yeah, after that 12 years, when they get back together at the very end at New Year's Eve, they were married within 3 months. So it, right, it had to be them. You know, it might not have started off good, but right, it had to be you. It always was you, you know, and I like that. That's solid.
Thank you.
That's a good.
And send a letter to Mr. Reiner to let him know I'm,
I will,
ready. I will. I'm available to start working.
Is he still doing New Girl episodes?
I don't know. I'm not keeping up with him much anymore.
you know, and when we're talking about the title, like, it works in the sense that these people have met three times in the movie. You know, once when they're going to college, once by chance on an airplane, and then, of course, the bookstore where they begin their friendship. And I get that that's kind of like an underlying tone, you know, that kind of works because you have those segmented interviews about couples and how they met and fell in love. But it's like, you know, like you said, something a little more creative, like it had to be you, like had italicized. You know, we've seen it in other movies. So they rushed the gun, but it is what it is. Now it works because of the title, but like when I was younger, when Harry met Sally, I'm just going to skip over this. So,
yeah. Although the names Harry and Sally are very memorable, so maybe right, it worked after all. Who knows?
Okay, so it is time to discuss probably what this movie is known for. One of the most iconic lines, one of the most iconic scenes. When you say when Harry met Sally, you think immediately of Meg Ryan grabbing the table and just going to town in her best fake orgasm tone, finishing, and you have a nice little old lady going over, I'll have what she's having. What a scene, completely unscripted. Meg Ryan said, let's do it. It was put in, and holy crap, I've never laughed so hard at a scene from the 80s like that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, same. Oh, gosh. Well, first of all, when I saw it when I was younger, again, didn't understand it. But now, you know, as I got older, I don't know. Like, it started to all make sense. I'm like, this is an option. You know, Sally did it in the movie, you know. So, you know, but it's funny. It's really funny. Of course, you know, the history is that, you know, Nora Ephron and Rob Reiner are writing this movie. You know, he discloses, like, the character Harry discloses that, you know, he really doesn't want to hang out and cuddle with women after they've had sex, and Nora's response to that was, okay, well, women fake orgasms, and Rob Reiner, in real life, what I find this so funny is that he really thought that was a lie. He did not believe it was true. He went and surveyed a bunch of people in women in his building where he worked, and they said, yeah, that's true.
Pretty
that
accurate.
Happened. That's accurate. We do what we gotta do, and you know, he couldn't believe it, and so that's why they ended up putting it in the movie. And then like you said, Meg Ryan, her response was actually to do it, and then Billy Crystal came up with that iconic line. I love so much that, well, actually, I guess Meg Ryan was nervous to, yeah, even though it was her idea, she was really nervous, which I totally understand. And so Rob Reiner had to step in and actually do the orgasm. Well, the thing is, though, is that the one person delivering this iconic line was Estelle Reiner, Rob Reiner's mom.
Yep.
Yep. He's doing this fake orgasm in front of his mother and realizes it, and it's just so embarrassed. But I love that his mom delivers this line. I mean, apparently she's a very funny lady. You know, Carl Reiner is known for being funny, but Estelle Reiner is also very funny, and she delivers it perfectly. I still wonder what Sally was eating. You know, who knows? Maybe it was the sandwich. But
you know, and
I love that scene. It's wonderful.
You know, and the best part is the setup when, because I watched the documentary, Rob Reiner goes in and goes, okay, you're just going to react the way you would react if this actually happened. I mean, someone is going to fake an orgasm. Have fun. And just some of the looks on the extras' faces, they're believable. There's a guy that's like, okay, what's going on over here?
Yeah.
It just completely sells the movie. You know, and it just for Harry's character who says, yeah, I let women reach climax, and she's like, really? You know, and it just, the setup is just so perfect. You know, that deli right now, that deli has a plaque where they sat. That deli is still in New York, and it says, famous bench where Harry and Sally met, and then it said, ... order what she's having.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you look it up online, you can just type in Harry Met Sally plaque, pulls it right up. But it is literally a staple of New York history now. So that's what makes it so awesome. So as we get ready to wrap this up, just want to get your final thoughts, Vanessa, on what makes this a flashback. You know, I don't want to say classic because that's Brandon's gig, but what makes this a flashback? Why are we revisiting When Harry Met Sally 30 years after it was released in November?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I mean, I revisit it frequently. It's a movie that I've watched maybe, I don't know, 100 times. It's on AF, is it, some film industries, they have a, you know, the best lines ever done. And it's on, also on
AFI.
AFI. And then it's also on the best romantic comedies, like the top 10 best, I think it comes in like number 6 or something. So it is a standard for romantic comedy. I don't know. It's one of the only romantic comedy films that you can watch where the characters feel very real. They're very witty. They're comedic. There is a rhythm throughout the whole film. It's just one of my favorites. I'm going to keep watching this. I'm not just going to watch it for this podcast. I watch it, you know, several times throughout the year.
Right.
So yeah, it's just one of my favorites.
You know, and I said November, I meant July. The movie came out in July of 1989. It was made for $16 million and went on and made $93 million. And just for that alone, $93 million for romantic comedy. I mean, this movie paved the way for romantic comedies because this was done so well. I mean, there's always been romantic comedies. You can even argue that All About Eve from the 1950s is a romantic comedy. But I mean, just this one was so inventive because I think that it took every aspect of a relationship and put it out there. And they did so in such a funny yet appropriate way because sex is taboo and this movie really went for it and talking about it. This movie went on to get nominated for a lot of Golden Globes in the comedy field, actor, actress, even director for Rob Reiner. Nora Ephron got a nomination. But the sad thing is when you get to the Oscars, a lot of those comedy categories go to the wayside. Nora Ephron still got an Oscar nomination for this Best Original Screenplay. And she would go on to write movies like Sleepless in Seattle, You've Got Mail. Her and Meg Ryan kind of start this thing where they work together for a long period of time. Rob Reiner goes on to direct A Few Good Men, Misery. I mean, just a lot of great movies. But to me, this movie really is a jumping off point for a lot of their careers. You know, they all had careers before this, but this really kind of solidified them as power players in Hollywood. But more importantly, this movie definitely solidified that romantic comedies can actually be funny and not too sappy. You know, and while looking at not just Harry and Sally's romantic relationship and friendship, but you have the friendship between their friends, you know, Carrie Fisher and Bruno Kirby. One of my favorite scenes was the football scene when they're in the stadium and Billy Crystal just gives that very monotone. I mean, they're doing the wave around him. He's just sitting there just looking straight faced about his wife leaving him. And it's just so powerful. Like the performance in this movie made really big stepping stones. So looking back, this movie as a flashback,
And did you know that was based on real life for Rob Reiner?
Rob Reiner, yep. He wrote that in, yep. I mean,
he really did have a serious conversation in the middle of the baseball game doing the wave.
Yep.
And, you know, wow. I mean, what a moment to be having a serious conversation. I love that he takes even these depressing parts of his life and turns it into an art and turns it into comedy that we can all enjoy.
I was just going to say, because, you know, these are lives. I mean, this is Nora Ephron and Rob Reiner essentially writing about their lives. And you couldn't pick two better actors than Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan to really bring that to life. And I mean, I don't want to call it a classic, but it is definitely going to be considered that given the time. I mean, the movie turned 30 years old in July. I remember my theater in Davenport, Iowa, they showed it. They always have movies come back. So, I mean, the cultural impact is still there. You know, and it's on AFI's top 100 movie lines. I know it's culturally relevant still, because it's probably one of the first honest takes of a relationship. So anything else you want to add before we close her out?
I just really love this movie. I love how New York is beautiful. Actually, we didn't talk about this, but I love that Nora Ephron seems to use a lot of old films as references for these movies. This movie references Casablanca, Sleepless in Seattle was, what's the one where they go on the Empire State Building? An Affair to Remember.
Yes.
And then even You've Got Mail is based on the film Shop Around the Corner. So she has this nostalgia for old films, but she uses it in a really refreshing modern way. And I love that this is still holding up even 30 years later. Maybe some of the technology in the film isn't quite holding. You know, that scene where Carrie Fisher's going through her Rolodex.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, if this poor woman only had Facebook, she would be able to keep up with all these people. She would have to carry around a Rolodex. But, right. You know, other than that, this movie still is a great film that is long-lasting, and I just love revisiting it.
Yep. Well, Vanessa, thank you for joining us here on Flashbacks. Do we have anything coming up for Beyond the Mouse?
Well, I believe that my August trip review will probably drop before end of 2019, fingers crossed. And then we do have our end of year review, and then we'll start off in 2020 with just new stuff.
All right, that's awesome.
I'm not ready, but you know, it's coming.
Yep. Flashbacks, I mean, something that's really awesome with the turn of 2020. 2000 movies are now considered part of Flashbacks, so we can start talking about movies that were released in 2000. That's going to be super cool. We are going to do a holiday special for December. We're going to talk about Christmas Vacation, and I know that probably our last full disclosure for the Front Row Network is going to be on Star Wars, and I believe that that should be dropping soon.
Don't say anything.
If you want to follow us, go ahead and follow us on iTunes and Spotify. You can also follow us on frnpod.com. We are also on the NPR Illinois website. You can go to nprillinois.org. We are listed under Community Voices. You can also check us out on our Facebook page at the Front Row Network. With me today talking about When Harry Met Sally was
Vanessa.
And I am Ryan, and we will catch you next time, flashing back to the Front Row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.